another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading How. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. I actually had a welcome change to my podcast recording schedule this weekend because I decided to hang out with my family, of course, on my terms. This episode is going to be fun because I have a special announcement on a milestone of my podcast, as well as I will continue this celebration of Christmas in other locations, as well as discussing Christmas in France in particular, and what the cancellation of Mass at Notre Dame Cathedral means to Paris and to the Catholic population in general, as well as discussing those traditions of Christmas in Greece and India, two other pretty exotic locations, I guess, when you compare it to the United States and in the South. I will continue my reading and commenting on Dickens' A Christmas Carol and why he couldn't be a tragic character. I'll also encourage you to find your own peace in this holiday season and learning to live peacefully and without drama. I am a living witness that the struggle is real, but it's so worth it. And thank you again for listening. So, what does the Christmas season mean to people all over the world, from France to Greece to India? Those places are so different in the climate, the traditions, and what they consider what Christmas means to each of those locations, and they celebrate them differently, but the same theme. Catholics or Orthodox Christians all over the world have their own traditions, but they are specific wherever they are. For example, I bring up Notre Dame because, and Christmas traditions, because this is a time of year where you open up your heart, you feel more, and you feel the love. There's been so many things that have happened this year, probably not so much more than any other year. It's just seemed like there is always something going on. Arrests of pop stars, still more revelations of wrongdoing. We got a sociopath in the White House, and we got a whole bunch of dumb people speaking with him, for him, and in support of him. But who cares? One of the most tragic things that happened at the beginning of the year was the April almost destruction of Notre Dame. Notre Dame means the Grand Lady that took over 200 years to finish, almost burned to the ground. The construction was started in 1160, and it was largely completed by 1260. And it's been modified through the centuries simply by additions, modifications, restorations. It was desecrated during the French Revolution, almost burned again to the ground during World War I. The only reason why it wasn't demolished during World War II is because France did not openly resist Hitler, but there was a massive underground of resistance that basically saved the city, and therefore this great cathedral. That was almost lost with probably one of the most devastating fires in history, and it released tons of lead dust into the air, and the effects of that probably won't be found for a while, but it's neither here nor there. What is most upsetting was after centuries of celebrating Christmas Mass there, which is a large part of the tradition of France, it was canceled this year because of the fire. However, people were expressing their disappointment in not being able to celebrate Mass. And I do believe, besides the Vatican, I do believe I saw once or part of it, the celebration of Mass at Notre Dame being televised on cable. But that, I'm not a Catholic, but I think it was just sad because I'm always intrigued by pageantry, weddings and churches, etc. But there was something that was said about the optimism of the season that spoke to the optimism of the season by they interviewed just general Parisians about their feelings about the cancellation of Mass, and they said, well, this is going to be a renewal of your faith. You can take this as a time to visit other church and pack out those other church and renew your faith and increase continue the celebration. Doesn't matter where you do it, but this may they may see an influx of increase in attendance for Christmas Mass at other locations and other churches. This is at a time where the youth have expressed a disillusionment with the just faith in general, or roots, or conventional Christianity, and in particular Roman or Catholicism, where churches and parishes are closing. People have no faith in the church or in its leaders. But this is one of those times where you can take the opportunity to not only reach out and congregate and fellowship with your other Catholics and celebrate the majesty that is this time of the season. And that interviewee, she hit it dead on the head. Also, I did some research on the celebration of Christmas in Greece. They actually, I realized that Greeks have been known for as being sailors, and before the tradition of decorating Christmas trees was brought in by the first King Otto in the beginning of the century, they would celebrate Christmas by the raising of a boat and the decoration of boats, because that is so much a part of their celebration or their culture that it makes sense to actually celebrate their seafaring past. Now they actually, in one of the major shopping centers, they actually not only have a lighted boat but also a decorated tree in celebration of the season. They exchange and bring as presents their sweet Christmas cookie, the Maloma Corona. They exchange those, as well as little boys run around and sing carols in the streets. They also break Christ's bread, because there's a wonderful piece of bread with a cross on the top, with figs and other fruits and just other delicacies. And I do believe meats such as tender lamb is also served during the celebration of that particular season. And I also want to say, the Greek Orthodox Church, one, that celebration in that center is in, I think it's Aristotle Square. They actually celebrate St. Basil's Day, which is actually January 1st and not the traditional, which is us in December 25th. So I thought that was actually cool. And not only do they exchange those traditional cookies, they also exchange nuts painted gold. And they burn their 12, instead of doing 12 podcasts at Christmas, they burn a fire 12 days prior to Christmas to keep the bad spirits away. It's kind of cool, very different. Also, The next country I found that interesting where they celebrate Christmas is India. The Christian population is definitely a subset of, and I'm a definite small minority in India, only 0.25%. However, when you consider that the population of India is made up of 1 billion people, 25 million Christians, is still more than most of the United States and North America almost combined. In Goa, they actually, the tradition of Christmas trees and the celebration of Christmas was introduced with the discovery and settlement of the Portuguese sailors and tradesmen in that area since way before the second century or so. In Christmas Eve, they have the largest meal, which I actually have demonstrated in the notes, with samosas and curries, and with more traditional food, which they celebrate after the Christmas Mass. To remember that Jesus is the light of the world, they actually, and also the appearance of the star, Bethlehem, they have a tradition of hanging paper star lanterns as you walk underneath and to commemorate this. And I think that was probably one of the prettiest traditions that I was actually found. I thought the boat tradition was cool, the huge mass and the gold and the celebrations in the Orthodox, as well as used to be at Notre Dame, except for not this year, was actually cool. But I thought those lighted paper lanterns were also very beautiful and a very amazing and beautiful example of celebration of the birth of Christ. So, welcome back to this segment of the podcast, in which I intend to read from more from A Christmas Carol by Dickens. The second part of the chapter is where Scrooge meets his first haunt, or haint, as they call it in the Old South, where he comes face to face with his past and the decisions thereof. And this is actually page 48, I believe. Scrooge expressed himself much obliged, but could not help thinking that a night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to that end. The spirit must have heard him thinking, for it said immediately, "Your reclamation, then, take heed." And he says, basically, he jacks him up. The spirit, anyways, jacks him up by the hand and tags him back to the past. They said they stood upon an open country road with fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. Not a vestige of it was to be seen. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was a clear, cold winter night with snow upon the ground. "Good heavens," said Scrooge, clasping his hands together as he looked about him. "I was bred in this place. I was a boy here." The spirit gazed upon him mildly. His gentle touch, though it was light and instantaneous, appeared still present to the old man's sense of feeling. He was conscious of 1,000 odors floating in the air, each one connected with 1,000 thoughts and hopes and joys and cares long, long forgotten. "Your lip is trembling, and what is that upon your cheek?" Of course he was crying, but then he just said in typical Scrooge fashion, "That's a pimple," and begged the ghost to lead him where he would. "You recollect the way?" inquired the spirit. "Remember it," cried Scrooge with fervor. "I could walk it blindfold." Strange to have forgotten it for so many years, observed the ghost. Let us go in. So it was like the ghost was reminding him of, it seems to be a picture-perfect past, but Scrooge had never thought about it in years. You could see all of these boys were in great spirits and shouted to each other until the broad fields were so full of merry music that the crisp air laughed to hear it. These are but shadows of things that have been, said the ghost. They have no consciousness of us. That means that we can exist and observe them, but they can't see us. Why did this cold eye glisten and his heart leap up as they went past? Why was he filled with gladness when he heard each give other Merry Christmas as they parted at crossroads and byways for their several homes? What was Merry Christmas to Scrooge out upon a Merry Christmas? What good had it ever done him? The school is not quite deserted, said the ghost. A solitary child neglected by his friends is still left there still. Scrooge said he knew it, and he sobbed. They left the high road by a well-remembered lane and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick with a little weathercock-surmounted cupola on the roof and a bell hanging in it. It was a large house, but one of broken fortunes, for the spacious offices were little used. Their walls were damp and mossy, their windows broken and their gates decayed. Fowls clucked and strutted in the stables, and the coach houses and sheds were overrun with grass. Nor was it more retentive of its ancient state within, for entering the dreary hall and glancing through the open doors of many rooms, they found them poorly furnished, cold, and vast. There was an earthy savor in the air, a chilly barrenness in the place, which associated itself somehow with too much getting up by candlelight and not too much to eat. They went, the ghost and Scrooge, across the hall to a door at the back of the house. It opened before them and disclosed a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of plain deal forms and desks. At one of these, a lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire, and Scrooge sat upon a form and wept to see his poor, forgotten self as he had used to be. Not a latent echo in the house, not a squeak and scruffle from the mice behind the paneling, not a drip from the half-thawed water spout in the dull yard behind. Not a sigh among the leafless boughs of one despondent poplar. An idle swinging of an empty storehouse door. No, not a clicking in the fire, but fell upon the heart of Scrooge with softening influence and gave a freer passage to his tears. The spirit touched him on the arm and pointed to his younger self, intent upon his reading. Suddenly a man in foreign garments, wonderfully real and distinct to look at, stood outside the window with an axe stuck in his belt and leading an ass laden with wood by the bridle. "Why, it's Alibaba," Scrooge exclaimed in ecstasy. "It's dear old honest Alibaba. Yes, I know, one Christmas time when yonder solitary child was left here all alone, he did come for the first time, just like that. Poor boy and Valentine, and his wild brother Orson, there they go. And what's his name? I'm glad about it. What business had he to be married to a princess?" To hear Scrooge expending all the earnest of nature on such subjects in a most extraordinary voice between laughing and crying, and to see his heightened and excited face would have been a surprise to his business friends in the city, indeed. And it talks about a parrot, Robinson Crusoe, how he lost himself in books. Great. What is the matter? Nothing, said Scrooge. Nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I just should have liked him, given him something. That's all. He's then reflecting back to his current self based on how he saw himself as a young boy, and he wished he should. He thought he should have, you know, given the boy something. He's learning even so early on. Then the spirit takes him to another Christmas, and Scrooge's former self grew a little larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. The panels shrunk, the windows cracked, fragments of plaster fell out of the ceiling, and the naked lamps were shown instead. But how all of this was brought about, Scrooge knew no more than you do. He only knew that it was quite correct that everything had happened so, that there he was alone again when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. Oh, he must have been at some type of school, boarding school. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost and, with mournful shaking of his head, glanced anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl, much younger than a boy, came darting in and putting her arms around his neck and often kissing him, addressed him as dear, dear brother. I've come to bring you home, dear brother, said the child, clapping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh. To bring you home, home, home. Home, little fan? Returned the boy. Yes, the child pleaded, brimful of glee. Home for good and all, home forever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home, and he said, yes, you should. And he sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man, said the child, opening her eyes, and are never to come back here. But first, we're to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in the world. Looks as if Scrooge was in some type of reformatory or school. And for a while, his father left him there. And maybe that's where he learned not to trust anyone, but he evidently loved and trusted his sister, who is the child, or who's the mother of the nephew that Scrooge dissed at the beginning of the book. How cool, that's so weird. His first apprenticeship was with somebody by the Mr. Fezziwig, and after, which is such a dichotomy or difference in how Scrooge closed up his shop, with it being freezing cold and his nephew being sent away because he was annoyance, and his little, and Scrooge is a assistant trying to get warm over candlelight. But when he was an apprentice and is in the same position as his current aide, Mr. Fezziwig would close up the shop on Christmas Eve. In comes his wife and his three daughters, and they would actually have a party in the warehouse. And it was so happy and joyous, and it was hard to think that old Scrooge participated and had this type of influence when he was such a miser later in life. How is that? Even though I have not read it, it seems that he went from one very joyous person, and then we start to get an idea of why he ended up being the pinch and avarice guy that he was. And of course it was over a girl. She saw him, the much older Scrooge, becoming what we were introduced to in the beginning of the book, and she called him on it and basically left him because of it. But the weirdest thing was towards the end, she ended up leaving Scrooge, marrying someone that was obviously poorer, having a whole bunch of kids, and even in spite of that chaos that ruled their house, they seemed to be happier than Scrooge was presently. And it kind of made Scrooge a little bit uncomfortable, because he started reminiscing if he had bended even a little bit and changed his course, he could have had all of those children, that oldest daughter, and the happiness that his former, I bet she was his fiance, he would have had with that former fiance. However, because of his choices, he ended up being alone and cold, even in spite of his first partner laying dying during the Christmas season, because that was the last part of that chapter. It ended with the comment on how happy the former fiance was, and the husband saw Scrooge sitting alone in his office by candlelight while his only partner in life was, I guess, sick and dying at the time. And he was still doing what he was doing, chasing the almighty pound or dollar. A little bit on the backstory of the origins of A Christmas Carol. Dickens once commented that he wanted to write something that would strike a sledgehammer blow on behalf of poor children. He wanted to bring about genuine changes to society. The 1843, the year and the decade preceding the publication of A Christmas Carol, were called the Hungry 40s. Britain was experiencing, it was in the depths of economic depression. Unemployment was significantly high. People were starving in the streets. There were two consecutive failed harvests that made the price of everyday foods beyond the reach of many. Dickens was born at a time, his father was actually a clerk who worked in the Navy Pay Office, but he was actually thrown into debtor's prison, and 12-year-old Charles was sent to work in a factory, or what they call a workhouse at the time. And it was during this time of the Hungry 40s, when he wrote A Christmas Carol, was a great reflection about how he had spent his youth. What was even more atrocious, that his original publicist, Chapman Hall, were not very enthusiastic about publicizing or promoting the book itself. And actually, it made Dickens move from, and they refused to pay for the rest of the publication. So Dickens paid for it himself. And then, to add insult to injury, he gave them the deuces and moved to the rival publishing house, Bradbury and Evans. And it became one of the most popular books of all time, and it has never been out of print. He basically made Scrooge ashamed, and was also pushing against society norm at the time about what to do with the poor, because the poor is always going to be among you. But he, in one statement, when Scrooge utters the comment at the beginning of the book that poor people who are unable to work should die and decrease the surplus population, that shame of that statement in Scrooge should reflect how society should feel in its ill treatment of the poor and of the people that are too sick to work. And they should all feel deeply ashamed when you think of human beings as worthless. I wonder what he would think about Brexit. I wonder what he would think about how the British government at this time are rolling back its social under support with NHS, as well as all of the rollbacks the Republicans and our jackass in charge is doing even in our country. I think he would be deeply ashamed, and I think these politicians need to probably reread A Christmas Carol, and it should put on blast their ill treatment of society's poorest and marginalized, because it doesn't make sense and we need to do better. We need to be better humans and treat other humans better. That's the bottom line. Children, old people, the infirm, the whole line. And I think that is what A Christmas Carol demands of us. We have to do better as humans. So I'm coming around the bend as I end this portion of the podcast. I just want to give a positive shout out for getting help and being helped. It's okay not being okay, but you don't have to suffer in silence. There is so much turmoil in this world, and the response of people to all of this turmoil is very tumultuous. I want to continue to live and learn in peace and have a life not filled with drama. I don't think to experience life you actually have to be subjugated to pain and to drama. It starts with demanding peace and acceptance around the holidays, my birthday, and just every day. You never get over the pain of your past and current hurt, but you simply know or learn how to get through it. But you can't fix what you don't acknowledge or recognize. So sometimes you need help, professional help, in unpacking it all. There's so many helplines that are available. And if you need help in navigating and in unpacking the trials of this life, please don't hesitate to call 1-800-273-8255. That helpline is open 24/7. And there are online help at suicidepreventionlifeline.org/chat/. If you have addictions and you need to speak to someone about it, there's 24/7 help at 1-800-662-HELP, 1-800-662-4357. And then I've also put the connections to Talkspace as well as to Doctor On Demand in the notes for you. But you can also navigate to Apple, the App Store, as well as Google Play to download these self-help and to get at your convenience in the privacy of your car, in your house, in the park, and at a fraction of the cost of conventional therapy. This journey is hard, and it's okay to ask for help. And also today there is a $100 off, or $100 off code, 100 for you, at Talkspace, that I think you should also take advantage of. And again, please don't suffer alone. Get the help so you can enjoy the festivities and the happiness of this season. And also, in ending, thank you again for listening. Please navigate to DalesAngelsInc.com for all special offers and updates on nerd news. Drop me a line at TennesseeFroisReading@gmail.com or leave a 2-minute non-trolley message at 423-463-0658. If it is non-trolly, I'll actually read it or play the message on the next podcast. If you're tired of freeloading and want to become a patron through Podbean, you can do so at patron.podbean.com/thetalkingfro or leave a tip for me at paypal.me/FeliciaDAI. I have thoroughly enjoyed creating this podcast, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I have enjoyed creating it. Until next time.